Chai FM, Eye on Terrorism, exclusively on Chai FM.
Good morning to David Harris. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I know lots about cursing.
What do you know about cursing?
Well, it's not something that I can repeat on the radio.
Yes, well, let's talk about some blessings, some curses. The UK election. I mean, we spoke to you last Monday. You were saying, you know, it's difficult to call. Depending on, you know, is terrorism going to be an influencing factor in the election? What are your thoughts, David?
Of course, we never truly know, but from the results, it's clear that British population, in my opinion, don't care one hoot about terrorism. Because if they did care about terrorism and the need for almost, I don't want to say iron fist because that sounds incredibly militant, but a real tough hand against terrorism, the outcome of the election would not have been as it was. It wouldn't have been this complete surprise, this turnaround. Theresa May would have been elected with an increased majority, which is what she was planning on doing in the first place. She wasn't going to the polls with regard to anything to do with terror. It just seemed like a good time for her to go to the polls to increase her majority. But given the fact that during the campaign there were two terror attacks in London and one in Manchester, you would have thought that any society that takes a priority list and checks it off and votes on that basis would have terror at the top. And phenomenally, they didn't. What bothers me about this and why I wanted to talk about it this morning isn't the election result itself. You know, democracy is democracy. What bothers me is that the people of the United Kingdom do not seem to understand the very real threat that is facing them right now.
Is that a new story, though? Because that doesn't seem to have been the case for a very, very long time.
I think you're absolutely right. It has been the case for a long time. But when you have three terror attacks, you know, one outside Parliament, one on London Bridge, you know, two of the most famous landmarks in the world, and then the third one, you know, at a pop concert being attended by thousands of teenagers and smaller children, and that doesn't sink in, then the question is, what is going to sink in? And these people, the British people, are making a tactical mistake by not waking up and not, you know, not seeing the writing written on the walls in massive letters. I mean, we're not just talking about, oh, we've caught a former ISIS person who's, you know, working on potentially creating a bomb in you know, in his bedsit somewhere in London. We're talking about three attacks carried out in the name of ISIS in the heart of the United Kingdom in the run-up to an election, one in the week of the election, and in not having an effect. There's something wrong with the British people.
Hmm. What would you have liked to have seen?
Again, if you remember last week when we spoke, I said it's not for me to tell people how to vote. But I just think that it's very clear that the Conservative Party has a far, far clearer stance on the fight against terror. And yes, it's true, there was a Conservative Prime Minister in office. But at the end of the day, you can't stop every terror attack. But when you have, I guess, the 21st century equivalent of a Neville Chamberlain, somebody who's happy to go to, you know, Arab capitals and shake the hands of people who are tyrants and say that we need to reach out to these people and doesn't offer a sensible solution for tackling terror domestically, and people still vote for him, that is clearly a mistake. I think the only option that the British people had in terms of security was to vote for the Conservative government of Theresa May. She's about to, I imagine this week she will resign. There will be political turmoil. There will be another general election later in the year. Hopefully, if and when there is that second general election, the British people will have the good sense to think about security as a major issue.
Crazy. What's your thought on France?
Nice place, good beaches.
Reasonable wine, yes.
Yes. Yeah, not as good as South African wine, I'm told.
That would be true, yes.
Yeah, do I get a bonus for saying that?
You do. You get big points.
Okay, it's election season in France, and I always wonder how the French people think when they have a presidential election, two presidential elections a month ago, and now another two votes this time for the National Assembly, which is the parliament of France. If people haven't seen the results from the first round of voting for the National Assembly this morning, then wow, talk about landslides. Emmanuel Macron, who was elected president, he only formed his political party in the last, year or two. Yeah. They didn't have any seats in parliament in the National Assembly to date. They do not have seats. According to the results of the first round, of the 570 odd seats available, they are going to snap up as many as 450. Okay. From zero to 450, four in every five seats in the French parliament will go to Macron. This is unprecedented. This is incredible. The question, of course, that I'm sure you want to ask me, and do you know what? I'll let you ask me the question.
All right. So what's his approach to terrorism?
Good question. that's obviously what we want to talk about. So Macron, in his election campaign, I think it's fair to say, was very wishy-washy. He's not an apologist. He realizes that there is a problem. He's very much centrist. The two candidates who were off to the left, who were destroyed by the voters in the presidential election, they were totally in favor of a softly approach and being apologists. Macron, it's a mixed bag. There was, for example, on the wearing of a hijab, and I realize that hijab is not terrorism, and we absolutely have to make clear that there's a differentiation, but it gives you an idea on where his feelings are towards the Muslim population. So he says there should not be hijabs in public schools, but there can be hijabs in universities. That kind of signifies where he's at. In the workplace, he believes every French person has the right to pray, whether they're Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Zoroastrian, whatever they are, as long as there is no coercion in the workplace to make other people pray with you. There should be no proselytizing, he says. But he's trying to play this middle ground where he also he says, two-thirds of Muslims don't wear the hijab. Two-thirds of Muslim women don't wear the hijab. So he's trying to minimize the problem. But as I said to you when we talked about this at the time of the presidential election, I think that in reality, once he's actually in power, which he is now, he's going to have to act very differently, because his security chiefs are going to be presenting him with document after document that says, we know there are 35 radicals in this village, there are 120 in this town, we need to act against them, we need to raid this place. He is going to have to wise up to those things. And so I'm not so concerned by Macron. I would have been much more concerned if somebody from the left who are into appeasement would have got in. I'm also relieved, of course, that Le Pen didn't get in, because I firmly believe that the more right wing you are, the more terror attacks you will face, simply out of rebellion and hatred for what you stand for.
So interesting. I just wonder when leaders, from Islam are actually going to stand up and say, if you are preaching hate and terror and all these things against the West, that you're actually, especially if you're perpetrating suicide bombings, that you're bringing Islam into disrepute. And actually, issue a fatwa against those people.
So certainly in the UK, in the wake of the recent three terror attacks we were talking about before, Muslim leaders, including religious leaders, absolutely got up and made those comments. It was almost wall to wall. The question we need to ask ourselves is, when we talk about Islamism and political Islam, are we just interested in those people who blow themselves up? Or do we care about those people who, for example, say that a woman is not allowed out of her house without the accompaniment of a guardian? Are we ignoring that, or are we tackling that? Because a lot of I shouldn't say a lot, some of those people who get up and speak against terrorism when it hits Muslim leaders do not speak up in favor of women's rights, in favor of LGBT rights, defending children against child marriage, etc., 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 which are all tenets of radical Islam. Where do you draw the line? Where do you say, yes, your behavior is acceptable as a leader, and where do you need to be doing more? And I think that we need to also look at recent evidence that suggested, I can't remember the exact facts, but it was something like of the 100 most recent terror attacks, at least 50% of those people who conducted the terror attacks, I'm talking about Islamist terror attacks in the West, at least 50% of those people had been members of non-violent Islamist organizations before they became violent.
Wow.
So these non-Islamist organizations, non-violent Islamist organizations are a breeding ground for these people. And it's rich pickings. You know, if you've got somebody who's already devout, already believes, you know, a woman's place is at home, that she needs to be covered up, et cetera, et cetera. People who are practicing FGM. It doesn't take more than a hop, skip and a jump if you're very persuasive as someone who's trying to radicalize. It doesn't take much to get these people on board to blow themselves up. So I think that the leaders in imams in mosques and so on and so forth need to do a lot more about tackling non-violent extremism.
David Harris, that's where we leave it today. Thank you very, very much. Look forward to speaking to you next week. And maybe next week things sort of settle down a little bit with Qatar, and we'll be able to take a bird's eye view of what it actually means. Thank you
very much. Absolutely delighted.